Anyway, hi, I'm Sarah Newman. Thank you. We could probably have the whole discussion on that, which maybe they should have. But anyway, the next few presentations will be focused on some of the work that we're doing in injury prevention in the National Park Service. My name is Sarah Newman, and I'm managing our public risk management program in the National Park Service. And if you were lucky enough to go to the presentation yesterday, the opening, one of the opening speakers was the director of the National Park Service talking about Healthy Parks, Healthy People initiative, and Safe Adventures is one of the initiatives within that initiative. What I hope to do in the short time we have is to characterize very briefly injuries in our parks so you get a sense of it, describe some of the strategies used by parks to prevent injuries, and then, it must be on a timer, and then explain some examples from our parks. So let me just back up very quickly and tell you, if you didn't see yesterday's presentation, so you get a sense of what the Park Service is about. It was formed almost 100 years ago. There are 395 parks throughout the United States. You may have heard of Yellowstone, Yosemite, Grand Tetons. But there are actually a lot of parks right here in this region, historic parks, et cetera, covering a huge amount of land in our country and waterways. We have millions and millions of visitors every year and have had 11 billion people visiting our parks since it was started in 1916. I just wanted to show you, if it lets me, which it won't, the list of the kinds of park units. So that was the last slide that's jumping forward. Anyway, we'll go to the next one, which just shows the growth of visitation to the park system since it was formed. The park system mission, I think, is important to talk about in the context of injury prevention, because when you're a public health practitioner working in a mission that's not public health, you have to think about the mission you're working under. And so as you can see, it doesn't say anything about protecting human life in this mission. It talks about protecting the treasures and the important historic, cultural, and natural objects. And so In an effort to do injury prevention, we can't always do all the things that we want to do in injury prevention. And I'll get to some of that. But I think it's important to see that we also want to keep people safe because we want to keep the lands unimpaired for future generations to enjoy. And if you get injured in a park, you're not going to come back and enjoy it probably very much. This is also important. This is one of our management policies, which clearly says that a priority in our parks is to save human life, whether it's visitors or whether it's our employees who come to our parks. So that's clearly a priority message, although it's not part of our mission. So our injury is a problem in the National Park Service. So now I'm going to characterize some of the injuries. And you know that there have been some sensationalist documentation about injuries in our parks through these books. But to tell you the truth, when I first got to the park system 5 years ago, this is really all we had when it came to knowing about the injuries were these books that were case examples and case studies of injuries that have occurred in our parks. And since that time, we've been working hard to get a good system, and fortunately we have a great epidemiologist who will be speaking next. But she's had to draw from a whole variety of sources, not just one active surveillance system. So we have a variety of sources. I'm not going to go into detail on all of these, but just showing this list gives a sense that we have way too many with all kinds of different information that we pull from. So what does that mean? At the end, in sort of the bottom line, is that in the big picture, on average, 3 visitors die in our parks every week. And I'm talking about unintentional injuries, not intentional injuries. So I'm not including suicides or homicides. And so on average, 14 people are seriously injured every day in our parks. Now remember how many visitors we have in our parks. I already told you we have like almost 280 million people visits. But what I want to show you also, and by the way, this averages to about 5,331 serious injuries over about a 5-6 year period, and about 160 people are fatally injured in our parks every year. Again, average. But what's important is that we found through some of our data sources that most of our fatal and non-fatal injuries are concentrated among a lot fewer parks than we have. So as I said in the beginning, we have 395 parks. But as you can see, fatal injuries are really only about 58 of our parks, park units. And those are the parks, as you can imagine, where there's an opportunity for an injury. And this sort of gives you, it's sort of doing it on its own, so I'm going with it, going with the flow. So fatalities by gender. So most of our fatal injuries occur among men, but your next question would be how many men visit our parks, and probably have more male visitation than female, but that's something we don't collect and we don't know. If we were to look at age distribution, we'd see that, again, in general, and this is all the parks, Most, about a quarter of our injuries occur in people aged 22 to 34, probably not surprising. Probably, again, if you looked at a denominator, you see a lot of our visitors are in that age group. Again, data that aren't collected. If you now looked at the top five activities that result in a fatal injury, and these are the activities, what do people do before a fatal incident? And driving and hiking and walking are up there on the top. They're the leading causes, followed by swimming, wading, boating. If you then were to shift gears and look at, did it for me, and to look at causes of injury, drowning is actually the number one cause of injury in our parks. And that's because there's so much opportunity for drowning when you're hiking. People who fall into rivers, fall in trains, so fall in, you know, riverbeds or water areas. And then followed by falls, struck by, against, and that would be something falling, some natural, rock falling, and we have had that, rocks falling on boats, killing people, trees falling, and then transportation-related causes, which used to be higher up in our years before, has actually fallen to fourth leading cause. So we think maybe that we're doing either having progress or maybe we have better data. I wanted you to also look at a little bit about our EMS, Emergency Medical Services, and Search and Rescue data. And so what you can see is the burden of injury and the burden of response, really, on our system is huge. We get 4,000 search and rescues every year and 15,000 emergency medical responses every year in our park system. So we're extraordinarily busy. And I think this is another reason that having a prevention, you know, through the work that we're doing is really important. In terms of SAR activities that result in injury, not surprising probably that most people who are a victim or a candidate for search and rescue are hiking, boating, swimming, out there doing activities that result in their either being lost or having some sort of problem where they need search and rescue. So let's move quickly on to some of the park strategies, and I'll provide sort of an intro to that and then give some case examples. I had mentioned response, and in the National Park Service, we really are world-class when it comes to response. We're called upon by jurisdictions throughout the nation to provide response activities. And there's our ranger running with our girl, right? It was Halloween, so I wanted something fun here. So what we think in our program is that we need to enhance prevention. And that's what our program is all about, and what Gabrielle and Jen will talk about also, is that if we can enhance prevention, the response people would probably be really grateful to us. Because you can imagine the risk it puts on our own employees that have to go out and rescue some of the folks. So the strategies we use in our field, in injury prevention, and many of you in the audience are in the field of injury prevention, will be familiar with these, what we call 3 E's, or sometimes 4 E's. The 3 E's are engineering controls, enforcement, and education. The 4th E is emergency response, which I'm not going to talk about, because clearly we're in prevention. There are prevention activities you can do in emergency response, but I'm going to talk about these 3 E's. What's really interesting in the national park system and sort of convenient to us is if you look at the structure of the national park system and look at this, engineering at the top, enforcement there on the bottom, with education on the bottom, our national park structure is organized for our convenience, of course, with planning and facilities, which are our engineering folks. We've got law enforcement, which helps provide support for enforcement activities, and we have a whole division on interpretation and education. Now, clearly, these facilities and this structure is structured around the National Park System mission. So planning and facilities build our roads and our buildings, law enforcement keep us safe and provide education information to our visitors, and, of course, interpret education, educate about the resource. But we see these three as a real opportunity for safety information and for injury prevention. And we utilize these three. They're our partners. And sometimes we've had to educate them about our role in injury prevention and bring them in. But we've leveraged and had great opportunities to work with these three divisions to enhance injury prevention and work on the 3 E's. Engineering is the most difficult in a park system. And I talked about this when I talked about the mission. Because clearly we can't put guardrails up everywhere. Signs shouldn't be splashed all over a beautiful park. We can't put lighting up in some of our areas. You'll notice at G.W. Moore Parkway right down here, right down the street, there's no lighting. If you drive at night, there's no lighting. Now, if that were a non-Park Service road, it would be required. But so there are certain, you know, Jen is going to talk about one of our parks where they have, you know, they don't have the same restrictions that you have when you're outside a park system. So engineering, while it can be the most effective in injury prevention, we cannot rely on as much, which makes our job much more challenging. But we do engineer, like in the CNO Canal where they fixed this wall, you know, the rocks were falling on people. So you engineer out the risk. Now people can walk by and not be fearful that a rock is going to fall on their head. Our law enforcement are fantastic, and they can really have an impact on injury prevention through just education, looking, ensuring that people have a permit when they're hiking. And then, of course, our interp folks and our interpretation rangers educate people either right before they're going to go on a hike to say you don't have proper gear, or even if they're not going on a hike, they might educate kids about helmet use or other areas that help provide a holistic approach to educating people about injury prevention. So now I'm going to move on to a couple of examples of where our parks either knowingly or unknowingly use the three E's to prevent injuries in their parks. And this is a great example in Sequoia Kings Canyon, an example that's been copied and replicated by several of our parks, which is the River Rover program. And why I love this example so much is because as an epidemiologist, they used sort of the shoe leather approach of Jon Snow without even knowing they were doing it. And what they did was, in 2005, they found that there were 6 deaths in their river. And it woke up one of the rangers to say, the madness has to stop. It was sort of like an infectious disease where you have a cluster. And he said, I've got to look at what's going on. And he actually had some of his staff look at 50 years worth of data. And they looked at 50 years worth of data and found out that in that time period, they had 200 fatalities, 4 deaths a year. And they were shocked. And they actually linked these data, like our friend Jon Snow, and mapped it, linked these data to a map to sort of see where these clusters fell. So they looked at the clusters, they honed in on where these injuries were occurring. They found they were occurring right along the riverbeds, and they were drownings, and they pinpointed them, circled them, and decided, okay, clearly the signs and brochures we have are not enough, even though it says something about the danger of this river. There's clearly a continued lack of awareness about the real risks of this river. It flows very quickly. It's very cold. It looks inviting, and so people go in it, but it's very dangerous. So what do we do? And they really discovered they needed one-on-one. They didn't have enough rangers to do it. So they implemented a volunteer River Rover program where they placed these river rovers, and they had pinpointed, by the way, with their data, the time of day, the day of the week, when these incidents were occurring, and pinpointed it to 2 o'clock to about 5 o'clock on Saturdays and Sundays. And that's when they put the river rovers out. So it didn't have to cost a lot of money. They really pinpointed, they trained these volunteers. Now these volunteers are not rescuers. So if they see someone drowning, they're not to go in and rescue someone. But they have a walkie-talkie and they can immediately get response. So they're not supposed to be rescue volunteers. But they're eyes and ears for the park. They're out there educating the public, telling them about the risks. They also pick up garbage while they're doing it. So, and they also talk to the visitors about the resource, about the importance of that park system. Oftentimes people visit our parks and they don't even know the significance of that unit, of that park system, that it has real historic and natural importance, and that's why it's a protected resource. So I think when people understand the importance of the resource, they understand their responsibility for that. In fact, they're a little safer in how they behave. They think they're more conscientious about their behavior. So these river rovers placed around the park system in key areas, and it really has been a success. And the success for strategy was that even among the volunteers, safety was a priority. So the law enforcement officers educated them about their own safety. They had to ensure they were healthy. They could walk the amount of time they had to walk. They were drinking water. They were keeping fit. They had adequate training. The law enforcement officer didn't sort of leave them there. They do ongoing coaching, ongoing supervision to ensure they know what they're doing. They learned from the volunteers. And so there was a lot of exchange of information, lessons learned. And of course, they provided some nice recognition to the volunteers at the end. So since the program was implemented in 2006, there have been 2 drownings, which were real tragic drownings. And it was during a free fee weekend. So there were two girls that drowned back to back, actually one day and then after another, who were both Hispanic, spoke no English. And so they actually did a serious accident, or I should say a border review, an accident investigation on those, and learned some lessons from that. But only two since that time period showed that we think, you know, there's a real correlation probably between this River Rover program. So in the last minute I have, I think I'll just talk about one more, which is, I think, very neat because these are the sort of things that are happening through our parks that we're beginning to discover as we do our work. But Cape Hatteras, a beautiful park in North Carolina, is called by the park superintendent the Graveyard of the Atlantic. And when I went there to visit with my three kids, as a visitor, not as a Park Service employee, not in uniform, I was very surprised to see one of the interpretation rangers who was about to initiate my kids, and we were actually at Wright Brothers, which is one of the Cape Hatteras parks. And as you know, Wright Brothers is where our airplane, you know, the Wright Brothers are who invented airplanes. And so the kids were about to construct their own airplanes. So they had all the kids lined up, and the interp ranger said, okay, kids, put down your materials. Before we start, I want to talk to you about your risks in the waters here. And they said, you need to be very careful in the water because rip currents are a major source of injury in our parks. Now, I almost collapsed. I thought, oh, my gosh, she's talking about injury prevention in this Interp Ranger program. How great. And she was fantastic. I mean, she was right there, you know, with U.S. Coast Guard, scientific information provided to the kids about how to get out of a rip current, swim parallel. It's not hard. Don't panic. You can do it. Of course, she topped it off with the make sure you're wearing your sunscreen, which then I just went into, you know, I collapsed. My knees got weak. But I was just so, you know, amazed by this Interp program where they very beautifully, and our Interp Rangers are wonderful speakers. So they're key people to talk about safety. Because they're great, they resonate, and the kids, you know, and adults, you know, they're great educators and teachers. So this was a park where they were doing it, they were embedding it into their program. So when I came home after hearing this, I wrote a note to the superintendent, and I said, you know what, I want to let you know your Interp Rangers are my heroes because of what they're doing. And he said, oh, well, this is a program we've been doing for a few years now, and we do it in all of our units throughout North Carolina. No matter whether, you know, they go to the Lighthouse or whether they go to Wright Brothers, they're all swimming. So, you know, and he based it on epidemiology because he said to me, one of the first things he said is, rip current drowning is the leading cause of visitor fatalities in our parks. And, of course, I then collapsed because he was using data to verify their program. And he said, we've you know, been doing this for years, you know, a few years now, and it's been really effective. One of the things he said that really sort of hit home for me is he said, I'd like you to, you know, look at the attachment I have on this email. And so he showed me a newspaper article that a visitor had written, a guy from Canada who said, I wanted you to know I was at one of your Interp Ranger talks at the Lighthouse. And he's sort of surprised to hear they were talking about rip currents because I was there looking at a lighthouse. There was not even water, really, for us to swim. He said, but literally that week, my daughter was caught in a rip current, and I saved her life. And then there was another little girl also caught who I didn't know, and I saved her life. He said, I never, ever would have known what to do or how to do this had I not gone through this Interp Ranger program. And so for us in the National Park Service, this is key. Sort of easy ways to get messages to the public about how to integrate safety messages, simple messages, not costly, not taking a lot of time, that literally save lives. And what we're trying to do is see how much more can we capture in terms of what the park system is doing. So I have lots more examples, but very little time. But do want to thank our division chief and also my colleagues here, Gabrielle Fisher and Jennifer Chang, who've been wonderful to work with, who are a pleasure, and as you'll see, are really, really smart and really good at what they do. And since we don't have time for questions, what I think I'll do is let them go on, and then at the end, you know, if you have questions for any of us, we can all sit up here and answer them. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.